all. It's hard to go from having no one and being answerable to no one to, well...
You could at least have left a note, Harding said. Mitzi got the shock of her life when she went up to wake you and found your bed empty and your belongings gone. We had no idea what had happened.
I saw Mrs. Warren as I was leaving, didn't she tell you? The memory of that strange, disjointed encounter was dreamlike. Had it really happened? Had Mrs. Warren really said the things Hal remembered?
Good riddance to you and your trash mother before you.
It seemed impossible. There was a disconcerted silence.
Mrs. Warren, you say?
Harding said at last.
No. No, she said nothing. How very odd.
Oh. Hal felt wrong-footed. She had assumed Mrs. Warren would have got her side of the story in first. Hal creeping out like a thief in the night, probably with the family silver under her arm. I just assumed... Well, I should have phoned earlier. I'm sorry, Uncle Harding. Uncle Harding. It was strange how the words slipped out so automatically. A few days ago, they had been so hard to say, she had practically had to force the title Uncle out of her mouth. Now, it was becoming habit. She was beginning to believe her own lies.
Well... We will say no more about it, my dear,
Harding said, a little pompously.
But for goodness sake, don't run away in the middle of the night again. We'd only just found you after all these years and... Well...
He stopped and gave a kind of harrumphing cough, covering up the emotion that Hal sensed lurking beneath the matter-of-fact facade.
I don't think your aunt, for one, could stand the strain. She was beside herself yesterday, with no idea where you were and no means of contacting you. Now, did you say you were coming back?
Yes, Hal said. She swallowed. With her free hand, she picked up the topmost letter from the pile in her lap, folding it back into the creases of the envelope it had lain in for so many years. Yes, I am. Chapter 32. Hal had not considered how she would pay for the ticket back to Penzance until she got to the ticket office at Brighton Station and her card was refused. As she dragged her case away from the counter, her face scarlet with embarrassment, she ran through her options in her head and could see only one, to try the app again and hope that the website would process the ticket without checking in with her bank. It seemed a slim hope, but she had no others. In a quiet corner beside the coffee stand, she pulled out her phone and was about to open up the app when she saw an unread text message from Harding.
Dear Harriet,
it read a little stiffly.
After consultation with Mr. Tresick, we would like to advance you your fare back to Trepasson, as the travel is necessary to sort out estate business. I enclose a code for a prepaid ticket that should function at any of the machines at Brighton. Please call me if there are any problems. Uncle Harding. P.S. Abel will meet you at Penzance.
As Hal closed down the message, she had the strangest feeling. A mixture of warmth and suffocation. It felt as though a snug scarf were being wrapped around her stiff and unwilling body, but just a little too tightly. Remember who you are, she thought, knowing she should have been typing an effusive thank you text. Remember that meek, grateful little mouse of a niece. But as the reality of her own past began to clash with the fiction she had created, it was becoming harder and harder to maintain that role, harder and harder not to slip up. Was she crazy to go back? As the train sped west, the sky darkening all the time, how new she should have been reading, researching, googling names, preparing herself to plunge back into her part. There was so much she needed to know. Had Maud got to Oxford? What had happened to her after that? But somehow, she could not find the will. She let her head rest against the scratched glass of the window and stared out at the countryside flashing past. It was cold, and getting colder as they left London and passed into the countryside, the bare trees rimed with frost, the grass white and puddles black with ice. On any other day, Hal would have found it beautiful, but today, all she could think about was everything she had left behind, and that perhaps she would never see again. The flat where she had grown up all of her past. She was moving forward now, with every mile the train covered, forward into an unknown future, her only belongings, the case of clothes and papers, at her side. But she was also going back into her own past. And of all the unanswered questions that jostled at the back of her mind, there was one in particular that Hal kept returning to, poking and prodding with increasing unease, like a tongue returning again and again to a sore tooth. Why had her mother lied? The diary, everything in it, that was clear enough. Maggie could not tell her aunt the identity of her baby's father and risk never seeing him again. But why had she lied to Hal herself? Hal had been turning the question over and over in her head with increasing urgency, but she could think of only one reason. To protect her. But from what? It was dark when the train pulled into Penzance, and Hal was almost asleep. But she roused herself and picked up her case, feeling the weight of all the extra clothes and papers she had crammed into it. As she stepped off the train onto the platform, she had the strangest sense of déjà vu, mixed with the unsettling realization of how far everything had changed. There was the station platform, with the big clock and the echoing announcements, and there she was herself, with her torn jeans and shabby hand-me-down case, and her hair falling in her eyes. But there, too, was Abel, standing on the platform, looking up at the arrivals board, and when he saw Hal standing on the other side of the barrier, his face broke into a smile, and he waved his car keys in the air. When Hal was through the barrier, she found herself engulfed in a completely unexpected hug. And then Abel released her and grinned, his tanned face creasing into lines of grief. "Harriet! It's so good to see you. You gave everyone quite a fright. We'd barely got used to having you around, and then... well..." He broke off, his face twisting into a rueful smile. "Let's just say, it's good to know you're okay." "I'm sorry." Hal found herself studying his face from the side as they walked slowly up the platform. "Do you know my father?" she wanted to ask. "Is he Edward?" But the words were unthinkable. "I didn't mean to make everyone worry, and I'm sorry my train was delayed." She glanced up at the clock, nearly 9:30. The train had been supposed to arrive at 8:30. "Were you waiting long?" Abel shook his head.
"A while, but don't worry. To be honest, I was glad of the excuse to get out. I had a surprisingly good coffee in the station cafe. I'm not sure I could have taken another one of Mrs. Warren's cups of grey dishwater."
In the station light, Abel's eyes were uncompromisingly grey themselves, but Hal couldn't stop herself checking again when they reached the car park, trying to make out their colour beneath the car park floodlights, while Abel paused to unlock a sleek black Audi. He caught her staring, and Hal flushed and looked down.
"Something on my chin?" he asked with a laugh.
Hal shook her head. I'm sorry. No, it's just... I... She swallowed and felt her cheeks flush. I'm still trying to get used to the idea that I have all this family. It's so hard to compute.
I can only imagine, Abel said lightly. We're finding it a bit of an adjustment ourselves, and there's only one of you. It must be 10 times stranger for you finding a whole family you never knew.
He opened Hal's door and took her case before shutting her inside. When he came round to the driver's side, he shut the door, turning out the internal light and throwing everything into shadows, illuminated only by the green glow of the dashboard. Abel, she said slowly as they pulled out of the space, I wanted to thank you again for that photo of my mother. I don't have very many pictures of her at my age, and it means... Well, it means a lot to me, that's all.
That's all right, Abel said easily.
He glanced in the rearview mirror and then put the car into gear.
You're very welcome. I don't have many pictures of that time either, unfortunately. I had more, but they didn't always come with very happy memories, so I didn't keep as many as I should. But I'll have a check when I get home, see if I can find any more. If there's any with your mother in, you're welcome to keep them.
Thank you, Hal said quietly. They were winding through the narrow streets behind the station when she plucked up her courage. Abel, can I ask something?
Of course.
Who took that photo, the one you gave me?
Who took it?
Abel frowned.
I'm not certain. Why do you ask?
Oh, Hal's stomach turned as they rounded a corner slightly too fast. I don't know. I just wondered.
I honestly can't remember, Abel said.
He was still frowning, and he rubbed at the bridge of his nose as though giving himself time to answer.
I think... Yes, I'm almost sure it was Ezra.
Hal swallowed, feeling like she was taking her life in her hands. It wasn't Edward, was it?
Edward?
Abel glanced sideways at her in the darkness of the car, the unearthly green light from the LEDs on the dashboard making his expression strange and hard to read.
Why on earth would you say that?
His voice was suddenly completely unlike that of the warm, solicitous man she had grown to know over the last few days. There was something cold and bitter in it, and Hal felt herself grow very still, like a mouse that has seen a snake rise up from the grass. She knew suddenly and with certainty that it would be very... very stupid to mention the diary. She had no need to make her voice sound small. It was already a squeak in her throat. I don't know. I just wondered.
It was Ezra,
Abel said flatly, turning back to the road, closing off the discussion. But that could not be true, Hal thought, as the car swung around the corner. Ezra was in the photograph. It's just... She tried again, but Abel cut her off, and this time his voice was cold with what sounded like anger.
Harriet, that's enough. It wasn't Edward. I didn't know him back then. End of story.
You are lying, she thought. His name is in the diary. You must be lying. But why? Chapter 33. When they arrived at Trepassen House, Abel parked the car and Hal followed him round the house to the main entrance. There were no lights visible, and the house looked almost deserted, the blank windows like black, expressionless eyes. Hal had a sudden premonition of how it might look in 20-30 years' time. The roof caved in, the windows cracked and broken, leaves gusting across the rotting parquet.
"We're back!"
Abel shouted as they entered the main door, his voice echoing along the corridor, and Hal felt her stomach flip before she could analyze why. But when the drawing room door opened and Harding's head came out, she realized. It was Mrs. Warren she was afraid of. Before she had time to dissect the realization, she found herself in Harding's stiff embrace, her cheek against his tweed-upholstered shoulder, as he patted her awkwardly and uncomfortably firmly on the back of the head, like a cross between a Labrador and a child.
"Well, well, well," he said,
and then again,
"well, well, well."
When he pulled back, Hal was astonished to see that his jowly face was ruddy with some kind of suppressed emotion, and his eyes were watering. He dashed at them and coughed.
"Mitzi will... she will be very sorry to have missed you, but she has already left to drive the children back home. They have school tomorrow."
"I'm sorry," Hal said humbly. "I'm sorry to have missed her, too."
"Edward had to leave, too,"
Abel said. Hal felt a sharp pang of something, quite different from the vague guilt she had felt at the sound of Mitzi's name. She realized that she had been hanging on to something, the prospect of seeing Edward looking into his eyes, trying to find something of herself in his face. "I'm sorry," she said again. "Is he... will he be coming back?"
"I doubt it,"
Abel said. His face was rather grim, and he seemed to realize it suddenly and make an effort to shake it off. As he took Hal's coat, he forced a smile, a rather insincere one.
"Unless we get held up here for another weekend, which I sincerely hope we won't." "Have you eaten?"
Harding put in.
"I'm afraid we all had supper some time ago, but there's tea in the drawing room and I could ask Mrs. Warren for a sandwich."
He trailed off a little doubtfully and Hal shook her head emphatically. "No, please, I'm absolutely fine. I ate on the train."
"Well, come through and have some tea at least. Warm yourself up before you go to bed."
Hal nodded and Harding ushered her into the drawing room where tea was waiting on the coffee table. The fire was burning low in the grate, and the lamps on the side tables were lit, giving the room a golden glow that somehow covered up the cobwebs and the cracks in the panelling, the dirt and the frayed curtains, and the damp and neglect. The room looked, for the first time, almost homelike, and Hal was suddenly overwhelmed with a sense of longing. It was not exactly a longing to stay here, for Trepassum was too gothic and gloomy to ever feel like a truly welcoming place. It had the sense of a house where people had suffered in silence, where meals had been eaten in tension and fear, where secrets had been concealed and where unhappiness had reigned more often than contentment. But it was, perhaps, a longing to stay a part of this family. For all his pomposity, the wetness at the corner of Harding's eye had touched Hal more than she could express. But it was not just Harding. Ezra, Abel, Mitzi, the children, each of them in their own way had welcomed Hal, had opened themselves to her trustingly. And she had repaid them, how? With lies. Only Mrs. Warren, Hal thought unsettlingly. Only she had never trusted Hal. The thought niggled at the back of her mind as she accepted the cup of tea that Harding poured and cautiously dipped in a rich tea biscuit. Since those hissed midnight accusations, Hal had been turning Mrs. Warren's words over and over in her mind, and she kept coming back to the same uneasy conclusion. Mrs. Warren knew. But why had she kept quiet? The only explanation, and it was not a very comforting one, was that Mrs. Warren had something to hide herself. The clock on the mantel chimed as Hal swallowed the last of the tea, and she, Harding, and Abel all looked up.
"Good Lord," Harding said. "Half past ten. I had no idea it was so late."
"I'm sorry," Hal said. "I've probably kept you up. My train was delayed."
"No, no, you didn't keep me up,"
Harding said. He stretched, his checked shirt pulling up from his belt and exposing a little slice of dough-like middle.
"I assure you, but today has been... well, let's just say I'm finding this whole weekend more than a little wearing, and with Mitzi and the children away, it's a chance to catch up on my beauty sleep. So I think, if you don't mind, Harriet, it will be up the stairs to Bedfordshire for me."
"I'll turn in too,"
Abel said with a yawn.
"Where's Ezra?"
"God knows. He disappeared after supper. Probably out walking. You know what he's like."
"Did he take a key?"
"Again, I refer the honourable gentleman to my previous answer,"
Harding said, a little irritably this time.
"God knows. This is Ezra we're talking about."
"I'll leave the front door unlocked,"
Abel said with another yawn. He rose, brushing imaginary lint off his trouser legs.
"Lord knows there's little enough to steal."
"Right. Good night, Hal. Can I give you a hand with your case?"
"Good night," Hal said. "And no, don't worry. I can manage myself." The narrow staircase that led up to the attic was unlit, and Hal searched for a long time before she found the switch. But when she clicked it, nothing happened. She clicked it again, but still no light. Her phone was somewhere deep at the bottom of her bag, and with her hands full of luggage, in the end, she was forced to make her way upstairs in darkness. There were no windows on the attic landing, and the darkness as she climbed was absolute, an inky, sooty blackness so intense that she could almost taste it. When she reached the top, she put down her case and felt with her fingertips for the turn of the corridor and the door to the attic room. Her room, it was beginning to feel like, though the idea gave her a strange, queasy feeling, as if history were looping round and coming full circle. This time, although it was stiff, it gave with a sharp tug, and she fumbled forward into the room, feeling for the light switch. When she flicked it, there was again no light, and this time Hal felt a surge of irritation. Had the whole circuit gone? What the hell? It didn't matter so much in here, for the curtains were open, and enough moonlight came in to enable her to find her way to the bed, undress, and crawl between the cold sheets. She was almost asleep, watching moon shadows moving on the wall, when she noticed something. It was not a fuse. Someone had taken the bulb out of the light fitting in the centre of the room, deliberately leaving her in the dark. All that hung there now was an empty socket. Chapter 34. "Can I ask a question?" Hal asked over breakfast. She took a piece of toast from the pile in the centre of the table and was about to spread it with marmalade, but when she unscrewed the top of the jar, there was a thick crust of mould over the jelly, and she felt her appetite diminish.
"What?"
Harding looked up from his own toast, which he was briskly plying with butter.
"A question? Of course. What is it?"
"St. Piran Village. How far is it?"
"Oh, matter of 4 miles. Why do you ask?"
"I thought... Hal swallowed and twisted her fingers in the fraying edge of her jumper.
I thought I might go for a walk this morning. Do we have time? When are we seeing Mr. Trezick?
Unfortunately, not until tomorrow, Harding said.
He cut his toast in half a little more forcefully than the action required, and his knife screeched on the plate, making Hal wince.
It seems he is a busy man, so you are free to do whatever you wish today. But it's not a very nice walk, I warn you. The fields are being ploughed at this time of year, so walking across them is rather hard work and distinctly muddy. You do better along the main road, but it means dodging the traffic.
I don't mind, Hal said. I feel like I need some fresh air. Is it hard to find?
Not especially, Abel said. But I'm not sure if you're dressed for it.
He looked at her a little doubtfully. The snappy chill of the night before was gone, and he was back to his usual solicitous manner, but Hal couldn't help wondering if the cold irritation was still there beneath the caring veneer. Which face was the real Abel Westaway?
It's very nippy out there. We don't get snow in this part of Cornwall very much, but we had a frost last night.
I'll be fine, Hal said. She put her hands in the pocket of her hoodie and hunched her neck into the collar. I'm very tough.
Well, you don't look it,
Abel said, and he flashed a little avuncular wink.
Listen, if you're really going to go, take my walking jacket. It's the red one on the peg by the front door. It'll be too big for you, but at least it's windproof, and if it comes on to rain, you won't get drenched. There's rain forecast for this afternoon. But if you get to St. Piran and it starts tipping it down, or if your legs are giving out, give me a ring, and I'll come and collect you from outside the post office.
All right, Hal said. She stood up. I might go now, get started while it's dry. Is that okay?
Fine by me,
Abel said. He put up his hands and gave her a quick, wry smile that crinkled the skin at the corner of his eyes. In the morning light, they looked suddenly rather blue.
I'm not your father.
Outside the front door, Hal got out her phone and opened up maps, and into it she put an address. 4 Cliff Cottages, St. Piran, Cornwall. The dial whirred as her phone calculated the distance and walking time, and then a route flashed up down the drive and onto the main road. She turned into the frosty wind and pushed the phone deep into the pocket of Abel's walking coat, then set out, the wind in her face, the phone warm in her grip.
I'm not your father.
Why had he said that? It was so uncomfortably close to her own speculations that she had not been able to find a reply, and had only gaped and then left the room hurriedly, hiding her shock. Did he know something? Had he and Ezra been talking? Hal had not thought much of Ezra's casual inquiry in the car on the way back from Penzance, but now his words came back to her and she found herself wondering about how much the brothers really knew. Abel's comment had been a perfectly reasonable remark on the face of it, just as Ezra's question was a perfectly reasonable thing to ask. People wanted to know where you came from, who you were. It was something Hal had dealt with her whole life.
Where's your dad? What does he do?
Questions that every child in the playground asked, trying to size you up. Even, most vexatiously,
why don't you have a father?
Grown-ups tended to phrase the inquiry more tentatively, asking, do you have family near? Or, are your parents around? But it came down to the same thing. Who are you? Why don't you know? The questions had never seemed to matter much when Hal's mother was alive. Back then, she had known who she was, or so she thought. But now they chimed so closely with her own thoughts, she wanted to scream. For that was the worst of it, not the lack of a father, not even the not knowing, but the lies. How could you lie to me? she thought, as she tramped down the long winding drive, past the twisted yews, with the magpies watching her as she went beneath, through the forbidding iron gates. You did know, and you lied to me, and you stopped me from asking the questions I had a right to have answered. She had never hated her mother, never. Not when there was no money, and the other children had Heelys and Pokemon cards, and she had sensible shoes, and drawings she'd done herself on little scraps of paper. Not when the electricity money ran out and they sat by candlelight for a week, cooking on a gas canister borrowed from a friend. Not when her shoes ran into holes and her mother was late home from the pier and missed parents' evenings and class plays because she could not afford to turn down a client. She had understood. This was not of her mother's choosing either. And what little they had, they shared, good times and bad. When there was money, there were treats. When there was hardship, they endured it together. She was doing her best. She was doing it for Hal. But this revelation, this was not something she had done for Hal. This was something she had kept to herself. Knowledge she could have shared, but had instead hugged to herself, guarding it. And why? What could be so bad about the man who had held the camera that day? The man whose eyes her mother held so steadily, the man she had loved? In her jeans pocket was the sheaf of letters, the letters postmarked from Penzance, she had found beneath the bed. It had taken her a long time to decipher them, but at last she had read them all. They were letters between Maud and Maggie, and they were planning to run away. They were not dated, but from the sequence of events, Hal thought that the last one was the one on top, the one she had read part of when she opened the packet. Now, she got it out of her back pocket as she walked steadily along the coast road, the wind in her face, chapping at her lips, and she bit her lip and tasted salt. Dear Maud, I am sending this to you via Lizzie, as I don't dare to put it in with the rest of the post. I am so glad you found us a flat. Please don't worry about the deposit. I have a little money left from my parents, and beyond that I'll... Oh, God, I don't know. I'll tell fortunes on Brighton Pier, or read palms on the seafront, anything to get away. I never thought I would write this, but I am afraid. Really afraid. Write back via Lizzie, her address is at the bottom. She'll bring it up when she comes to clean. But if it comes to the house, you know who will open it, and all hell will break loose. I love you, and please hurry. I can't cope with it here much longer. M. Kiss, kiss. There was an address on the bottom. 4 Cliff Cottages, St. Piran, Cornwall. The address in Hal's phone. The paper fluttered in the wind as Hal folded it up, but the words stayed with her. I am afraid. Really afraid. She had held them inside her all of that long train journey, rattling in her head in time with the wheels of the train. When she had first read the letter, curled up on the sofa with her phone in her lap, it was her great aunt, she had imagined, standing in the door of the little room, drawing the bolts. Or maybe Mrs. Warren, with her hissed invective and her hatred. But now, Hal wondered. For her mother had been, not fearless perhaps, but full of courage. Hal could not remember a time when she'd turned away from something because she was frightened. Because it was stupid, yes. Because it was risky, and she had a child to protect and bring up, certainly. But just because she was afraid? No, that never. If something was difficult but necessary, Hal's mother faced it. What had made her so afraid she had run far away from Cornwall to the other side of the country and never spoken of that time again? Hal wondered, and as the sky darkened with snow clouds and the chill deepened, she realized something. She was afraid too. Not just of what she was about to do, but of what she might find at the end of it. Chapter 35. St. Piran turned out to be not so much a village as a collection of buildings blown together like driftwood along the roads and lanes that wound down to the sea. Here was a farm, hardy little sheep crouched low against hedgerows, shielding themselves from the wind. There was a petrol station, shuttered up and closed with a cardboard sign in the window. "Ring Bill Nancarrow or knock on cottage for key to pump." The church where the funeral had been held was nowhere to be seen, but as she traipsed down the main road, Hal heard a far-off church bell tolling the hour. 10 slow strikes, rather mournful. At last, Hal saw a red pillar box and beside it a solitary phone box sticking out into the road. And as she rounded the bend, she saw the post office Abel had described. Inside the pocket of Abel's coat, her phone buzzed, indicating a turning, and pulling out her phone, she checked the route again and saw that she was supposed to turn left down a little unmade road, past a row of modest brick-built council houses with sensible gardens, low roofs and storm porches closed against the sea winds. "Cliff Cottages," read the sign at the corner of the road, and Hal felt her heart speed up. Number 4 had a neat square of frosty glass in front of it, and a crazy paving path up to the front door, and Hal found her hands were trembling, not just with cold, as she licked her lips and tucked her hair behind her ear and walked up the garden path to ring the bell. Somewhere inside the house, a novelty chime sounded, and Hal waited, her heart beating hard as she heard the sound of shuffling footsteps and saw a shape appearing through the glass-patterned door.
"Hello?"
The woman who stepped into the storm porch was in her 40s or 50s, very plump, with rolls of curly hair dyed a slightly improbable shade of yellow that almost matched the wet marigold she was still wearing. But there was something kind about her face, and Hal found herself relaxing a little in spite of her nerves. She swallowed, wishing she had spent more time rehearsing what she was about to say. "Hello, so sorry to disturb you, but do you know someone called Lizzie?"
"I'm Lizzie," the woman said.
She folded her arms.
"What can I do for you, my love?"
Hal felt her heart quicken, hopefully. She licked her lips again, tasting the salt that seemed to permeate everything around here.
I think you knew my mother."
On the way down to Cornwall, Hal had gone back and forth over the problem of what to say and how to phrase her questions. She had thought of imaginary cousins, fake names, even of resurrecting Lil Smith as an alias. But when the door opened and Lizzie had been there in person with her plump, kindly face and her Cornish accent soft and rich as clotted cream, somehow all of that had fled, and she had found herself saying the last thing she had intended, the truth. Now, she was sitting in Lizzie's living room, and the story was tumbling out so fast that Hal barely had time to consider it. Her mother's death, the lack of money, the letter from Mr. Trezick, and the improbable hope that this mistake might actually be real, followed by the growing conviction that it was not, the disquieting discovery of the photograph, and the bolts on the attic door, and the midnight flight back to Brighton, and then finally, the diary in her mother's papers, and the letters, and the care of a dress that had led her here. Oh, my lover.
Lizzie's round red face was full of concern as Hal came to a halt, and she sat back against a cushion and fanned herself.
Oh, my days. What a right old pickle you've got yourself into. And you went told them?
Hal shook her head.
But I will. I know that. I have to. I don't...
She stopped.
I wanted to find out all I could before I burned my bridges. Well, I'll tell you all I can, but it ain't much. It's so long ago, and I never saw neither of them after they left, so I can't tell you much beyond what happened here. Your ma, she arrived... when must it have been? 1994, I suppose it was. Late spring or early summer. I remember her arrived in the taxi from Penzance Station, and it was a right cold day, and those bloody magpies were wheeling and circling and making a nuisance of themselves, as usual. She was a lovely girl, your ma. Pretty and kind, and always happy for a chat. Whereas her cousins... I don't know. They always kept themselves to themselves. It was always very them and us with the villagers. I suppose for so long it had been all of them up there in the big house and all of us down here, they was used to it. But your ma being brought up somewhere else, she saw it different. We were always talking when I was supposed to be cleaning. And Mrs. Warren, why, she had a sharp tongue. She'd come along and snap at me with her tea cloth. Fair her, it did. And she'd say, back to work, Lizzie. They don't pay you to stand there gabbing. But I always felt... Well, I suppose the truth of it was, your ma was lonely. She'd lost her mother and father, and she'd come here expecting to find family, and what did she get? The old maid's room in the rafters. And the cold shoulder from her aunt and cousins. But not from Maud, Hal said. In the diary it reads as if Maud is her friend. Later, yes. But Maud? Oh, she was a funny one right from a little girl. I started cleaning up there when I was 15, you know. And she must have been about 5 or 6 when I started. And I remember her standing there watching me with her hands on her hips, and I say to her, wanting to make friends like, I like your dress, Maud. It's very pretty. And she tosses her head and says, I'd rather be complimented for my mind than my clothes. But I couldn't help it. I just burst out laughing. Mortal offended she was. She didn't speak to me for weeks after. But when you got to know her... Underneath that prickly surface, she was a kind little thing, and fierce when she felt something was wrong. I'd been there a few years when there was trouble over some missing money, and Mrs. Warren was interrogating all the staff, and I was the last one to have cleaned the room where it was supposed to have been. And I was all prepared for the sack, but Maud, she comes marching into the kitchen like an avenging angel, ignoring Mrs. Warren telling her to get out, and she says... God damn it, Mrs. Warren, it was Abel took that money and you know it. We all know he steals from Mother's purse, so leave Lizzie alone. And then she stormed out. She couldn't have been more than 10. Oh, but listen to me rattling on. This isn't what you want to know. No, Hal said slowly. No, it's fine. To be honest... My mother never talked about her time here. It's sort of fascinating to find out all this. I never knew she had a cousin with the same name, let alone about Abel and Ezra and Harding and all the others. I wish she'd told me. I don't know why she didn't. I don't think it was a very happy time for her, Lizzie said. And the light went out of her kind eyes, her face suddenly sad. She came here after her parents died, and then it wasn't more than a few months before she got into trouble. With you, I suppose it must have been. Of course, we didn't know anything about it at first, at least I didn't. But by December, there was starting to be talk. She'd been sick all through the autumn, and tongues started wagging.
and by the time Advent came around, she was beginning to show. She was only a slip of a thing, and for all the baggy clothes she'd begun to wear, you could see something wasn't right. And she had that look to her. I can't explain it, but you'll know it. Something a little bit puffy around the face, a way of holding herself when she thought no one was looking. I'd seen it before, and I knew. I think the only person who didn't suspect anything was Mrs. Westaway, and when she found out... Oh, it was like the plagues of Egypt descended on that house. Doors slamming and poor little Maggie confined to her room for weeks on end. She couldn't stand to look at her, Mrs. Westaway said, and there were trays sent up and down and she was barely allowed out. Maud took her meals up whenever she was allowed, and I used to see her coming back down, and it looked as if she'd been crying. We all tiptoed around for weeks in the run-up to Christmas, wondering what was going to happen and who the father was. Someone at her school, we reckoned, though if she knew, she never did say. But it wasn't, Hal broke in urgently. She did know, and that's partly why I came here. I was hoping you could help me work it out. It was someone who came to stay at Trepasson House that summer. It must have been in August. A blue-eyed man or a boy, maybe. Do you know who it could be? Came to stay? Lizzie was frowning. I don't know about that. I can't remember more than two or three times the children had friends to stay. Ezra, he had a school friend back once, I think, though I can't remember if it was that summer or the summer before. I don't remember his eyes. And Abel, he had some friends from university who lived in Cornwall and North Devon. Sometimes one of them would come for the day, especially when Mrs. Westaway was out. The house was a different place when she wasn't around. I'm sorry, she added, seeing Hal's expression. I wish I could help you more, but I'd be lying if I said I remembered. And I only came up a couple of times a week as the children got older. Mrs. Westaway just didn't have the money for daily help by then, and I had my own kids anyway. Don't worry, Hal said, though she felt her heart deflate like a pricked balloon, a great reservoir of hope that she didn't know she'd been holding on to, leeching away. Tell me about what happened after, with the letters.
Well, that was the real scandal then.
So Maud was invited to interview at an Oxford college in December. And while she was away, things got very bad between Mrs. Westaway and your mother. I'm ashamed to say it, but I was glad to get out of the house when I left each day. I'd hear Mrs. Westaway screaming at her, though they were up in the attics, threatening her with all sorts if she didn't give up the name of the father, and your mother crying and pleading. Once I saw her on the way to the bathroom and she had a black eye and a split lip. I wish now I'd done something, but... She trailed off, and Hal saw her blink and rub at the corner of her eye. Well... Maud came back and it was like she'd seen the light or something. She told me she had an unconditional offer from whatever it was, some women's college, I think, so that she didn't need to study anymore, near enough. But she told me not to tell her mother, and in January she got invited back for another interview, or said she did. Afterwards, I wondered if there really was another interview, or if it was just an excuse to get away. And that was when the letters began. Maggie was here, writing to Maud, sometimes in Oxford and sometimes in Brighton, and Maud was there, writing back, and I felt like a ruddy postman, I can tell you, shipping the letters up and down. But by then, I was really afraid for your ma. Afraid that Mrs. Westaway would go too far and hit her hard enough to give her a miscarriage or summat. So I was glad to do what I could to help.
You don't know what any of the letters said? Hal asked. She almost held her breath waiting for the reply, but Lizzie shook her head.
No,
I didn't open them.
Only one I saw, and that because your ma didn't have an envelope and she asked me to put it in one for her. It was the last one.
What did it say? Lizzie looked down at her lap, her pink fingers fretting anxiously with the rubber gloves she held there.
I didn't read it,
she said at last.
I'm not that sort of person. But it was folded in a way I couldn't help but see one line, and it stuck in my head in a way I've never been able to shake. It said, I've told him, Maud. It was worse than I ever imagined. Please, please hurry. I am afraid of what might happen now.
There was a long silence. Lizzie reliving those past memories. Hal turning the words over and over in her mind, feeling the chilly dread within her growing. Who? She said at last, and then stopped.
Who was the
him in the letter? Lizzie asked, and Hal nodded dumbly. Lizzie shrugged, her plump, cheerful face grave and rather sad.
I don't know. But I always assumed...
She bit her lip, and Hal knew what she was about to say before the words were spoken.
I always assumed she'd told your father about her pregnancy at last, and it was him she was afraid of.
I'm sorry, my darling.
So...
Hal found her lips were dry, and she licked them, and took a sip of the cup of tea Lizzie had set before her when they sat down, though it had gone cold in the cup.
So, what happened next? I know my mother did move to Brighton and had me. What about Maud?
Well, that set the cat among the pigeons,
Lizzie said. Her face broke into a smile, and she took a long draught of her own tea and set the cup down.
It was maybe late January or early February. Maud had come back from Oxford, or wherever she was supposed to be, but I knew that wasn't the end of it. There were letters coming back and forth, and Maud whispering on the phone in the hallway, jumping like a thief when I came round the corner. Anyone else, I would have thought it was a boy. But I knew enough to know it wasn't that. I wasn't there the night they left, but I came up the next day to clean, and the house was in uproar. The girls were gone in the night. They'd taken only their clothes, seemingly, and not so much as a note left. Mrs. Westaway was tearing apart the attic room and Maud's bedroom, saying things I hope never to hear again. Foul things about both of them, her own daughter, too. But they never called the police. I know that, for my brother-in-law was in the force, and he said they never had no official report of the girls going. Perhaps she was afraid of what would come out, I don't know. So in the end, I suppose, in a way, she let them go. Maud, or maybe Maggie, I was never sure, sent one letter to the house, I know, for I saw the envelope lying on the hall table, and I recognised the handwriting from all those days and weeks ferrying papers back and forth. They had rather similar writing, but it was definitely one or the other. I don't know what it said, but I saw Mrs. Westaway read it through the crack in the drawing-room door. She read it, and then she tore it up, and threw the scraps in the fire, and then she spat after them.
And that was it, Hal said uncertainly.
You never heard from them again.
That was it, Lizzie said. Almost, at least. I got a postcard from Brighton one day in March. All it said was, thank you, M, kiss, and no return address. But I knew who it was from.
And they never came back, Hal said. She shook her head wonderingly, but Lizzie shook her head in reply.
No, I didn't say that. I never heard from them again, but Maggie, she came back.
What? When?
After she had you. I wasn't there, so I don't know what happened, but I know she came back, for Bill Thomas ran a taxi from Penzance in those days, he's long dead now, and he took her up to the house and told me afterwards. He said he dropped her off and asked if he should wait, but she said no, she would call when she wanted to be collected. He said she had a look on her face like a maid going into battle. A Joan of Arc look was what he called it.
But why? Hal found herself frowning, shaking her head. Why would she go back when she tried so hard to get away?
I don't know, my darling. All I know is that really was the last I heard of her. Of either of them. Neither of them ever returned again after that. I often thought about them. And about the baby. You, I suppose it would have been. I often wondered how they were doing. You say your ma became a fortune teller?
Tarot, Hal said. She felt a little numb, battered by all the information that Lizzie had imparted. She had a booth on the West Pier in Brighton.
That's no surprise, Lizzie said. Her broad face broke into a smile. Oh, but she loved her tarot cards. Treated them like fine china, she did. And many's the time she read for me. 3 children, she said I'd have, and 3 children I did.
And what about Maud?
I always thought she'd go on to become some university professor at a women's college. History it was she wanted to study, I remember. She said to me, there's nothing you can't learn from history to tell you how to deal with the present, Lizzie. That's why I like it. However evil men are now, there's always been worse. So that's what I'm guessing.
She took another sip of her tea, her blue eyes twinkling at Hal over the cup.
Professor of History at the University of London. That's my betting. Am I right?
I don't know, Hal said. Her throat had closed and her voice, when she managed to speak, was stiff and croaky. I never met Maud, at least not that I can remember. My mother never even mentioned her name.
So she just disappeared?
Lizzie said. She raised her eyebrows, faint blonde shadows almost disappearing into her yellow fringe. I suppose so, Hal said. But wherever she went, she must have gone before I could even remember her face.
Chapter 36. The walk back to Trepassen House took Hal much longer than the outward one. She had refused the offer of a lift from Lizzie, and partly the slowness was because the walk was uphill and the rain had started making the verges slippery, forcing her to stop and wait for a gap in the traffic every time she passed a deep verge-side puddle, or risk getting drenched by the splashback. Partly, though, the plain truth was that she was deliberately walking slowly, trying to sort out the tumble of thoughts before she had to face Harding and his brothers with the truth. She had to come clean. She had known that even before Lizzie had spoken the words. She had known it, Hal thought, even before she left for Brighton. She had been running away from the whole situation, from the confession she knew she must make. She tried to imagine the words. I lied. I have been lying to you since I got here. My mother was not your sister. She felt sick at the thought. There had been something about the relief with which Harding and Abel had welcomed her back yesterday, almost as if she had been their own sister come home at last. And now she was going to tear that all away from them again, plunge them back into the decades-long uncertainty they had endured before Hal walked into their lives. How would they react? Harding would rage and bluster. Abel would shake his head. Hal could almost see the disappointment in his eyes. Ezra, she didn't know. He was perhaps the only one of the three she could imagine taking the news with equanimity, maybe even laughing. But then she thought of the barely suppressed rage and grief she had witnessed beneath the surface when he spoke of his sister's disappearance, and suddenly she was not so sure. Whatever happened, though, however angry they were with Hal herself, Harding at least would be relieved once the news had sunk in, for Hal's bequest would fail, and then what? The money would return to the pot, presumably, and would be treated as if their mother had never made a will. Thank goodness Mitzi wasn't there, for the thought of confessing in front of Mitzi, who had been so kind, Hal almost doubted she could have brought herself to do it. But Lizzie knew, and with that came a kind of relief, for there was no going back, no way Hal could chicken out now. She had to push through with this, make her apology.